Body, the House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Would you please take the roll?
Representative Millet, not present. Representative Price Tompkins.
Here.
Representative Gaddis.
Here.
Representative Hughes.
Here.
Representative Isaacson.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Chair Lynn.
Here. Okay. With that, begin the meeting. We have three items on today's agenda. First one is H.J.R. 22. It's the constitutional amendment proposed for federal constitutional convention. And the next is House Bill 274, involving hearings on referenda. And third is H.J.R. 17, proposed constitutional amendment to guarantee permanent fund dividend. And so with that, we're going to call H.J.R. 22 up for opening testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, North Pole Fairbanks. Thank you for this opportunity.
Okay. Please introduce your bill and tell us all about it.
Appreciate that. House Joint Resolution 22 is requesting the United States Congress to call a convention of the states to propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States that impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and limit the terms of office of federal government officials, and urging the other 49 states to request the United States Congress to call the convention of the states. It is a solemn duty of the states to protect the liberty of its people, particularly for the generations to come. To propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States through a convention of the states under Article 5 to place clear restraints on these and related abuses of powers. Article 5, U.S. Constitution, states, "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution. When ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions of three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses and the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. By calling a convention of the states, we can stop the federal spending and debt spree, the power grabs of the federal courts, and other misuses of federal power. The current situation is precisely what the founding fathers feared, and they gave us a solution we have a duty to use." That's my presentation, my formal part, but my personal part is, we have all now pretty much been touched one way or the other by the federal government. Didn't used to be that way. Used to be that we'd get a comment here or a comment there by our constituents of something happening. But now it seems like it's almost every day. It's something else to do with our waters or something to do with our air, or something to do with our miners or our businesses. You know, we felt that in North Pole just this week and still trying to figure out where we go from here. So we really have two options. You know, we could sit back and do nothing, which we're very good at, you know, or we do very well with speeches and telling the government what we're going to do because what they did to us, and then it slowly dies off until the next thing happens. Or we have an alternative, and the alternative is for the states to stand up for their constituents and say, enough. You have overstepped your powers, and we're going to take it back. And this gives us the means to be able to do that. 34 states have to come together. 38 have to ratify an amendment. So I know one of the biggest things that I have heard is it's going to be a runaway convention. They're just going to pass all these amendments. Just think of the 40 of us, how long it takes sometimes if we would have to have 38 out of 40 to agree. Bring our fellow, you know, from the other body and make it 60, make it the same percentages, mix it up a little bit more. How much would it take to do that? So I don't think that's the fear. But for me at this point, it's sending a message. Whether or not we get enough states, which I hope we do, so don't take it wrong. But I want to send a message to the federal government and say, resolutions are great, and I think what Representative Millet has done and the changes that she's made, but it took her years years to get something done that was clearly the responsibility of the federal government. And it will take us years, I'm telling you, years to undo all the regulations that they have put on us. The one closest to home to me was my minors this summer. Can you imagine? You're a minor. You're up in pretty much the middle of nowhere. You're lucky if you have a phone. You're there with your family, your spouse, your children, doing your thing. You're using no chemicals in the water, nothing. Okay, you're just dredging. And all of a sudden, people come dressed like they're ready to shoot you down out of nowhere. For what? You haven't broken any rules. Really looking, fishing to see if they can find it. Putting your family in danger for absolutely no reason, except that they could. And we all get mad. I remember the headlines. I'm sure you remember the headlines on for the miners on, you know, oh, my goodness, we're never going to let this happen again. Who started? Who did this? Have you received those answers? I haven't. I don't think we'll get them. But the answer for me is this. We're not going to let it happen again. We're going to make sure that we protect our people first from federal overreach. We want clean water. We want clean air. We want businesses that, you know, are being ran correctly. But that's what we do here in Alaska. We don't need Washington, D.C. to tell us. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's my presentation. I'll take any questions. I know we have Mr. Eichler on the phone, and as well, I'm hoping that we have some West Valley students who wanted to participate. And so thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I believe there's some other legislation in the hopper on generally the same subject. How, without having a hearing on that, which we're not going to do, how would this be different from other potential legislation that's in the process here?
Mr. Chair, I can just tell you what mine does, and what it does, you know, is what has happened in the past, from my understanding, when we've tried to do resolutions like this to get people together, is that other states and even within the state have put together resolutions that are very different from each other. And to call a convention of the states like this one is, it's written very specifically, because that's what about 14 other states have already done, so that when it goes to Congress, they can't take it to court and say, well, we didn't mean what we did. There are other ways to do this same thing, like the balanced budget amendment, but that's a very specific amendment that there would be a convention for. This one would be for anything that has to do with federal overreach. They would be able to come together, the states would, however the states decide to put their delegates together. It would not be the same subject as I believe the other resolution is.
Okay. Do you have handy a list of the other states who have agreed to this?
Mr. Chair, what I have is I can tell you the states that have legislation in. Georgia has actually passed it through their Senate at this point, so they're a few steps ahead of us. Most others have introduced it at this
who
point.
Has?
Arizona, okay. Florida. I'm going to flip through my pages to see. Let's see. Iowa, I believe it is. Idaho, we have. Kansas, and it should all be in your packet. We put all the resolutions in your packet. New Mexico and a few others. And like I said, they're in your packet. We put the actual resolutions in there so you can see how they all match together.
Okay, thank you. Any questions at this point? Or who was, somebody had it. I missed who it was.
I will.
Okay. Vice Chair Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to tell you that thank you for bringing this legislation forward. And just typically at this time, Mr. Chair, it's for questions, and I understand that. But I can't hardly resist to try to throw my two cents in because I am enthusiastic about your resolution. And I'm the one that has a similar legislation that will be before this committee before too long. And I just want to say that the amendment process to the U.S. Constitution is a profound process, has a deep, long history, as does conventions and the process. The process is not new. Representative Wilson is not presenting something that is new. There's been zero amendments to the Constitution made through the state's process, but there's been 27, of course, that have come through the congressional process for the amendment. But I guess just in very general terms, The people of the United States of America are sovereigns, and the fact that we have a supreme law of the land in the sense of the Constitution, and the fact that we have a process where we can go back and change that Constitution is very significant and very unique. And so thank you for bringing it forward, and I wish you well, and I'll try my best not to help you out too much. And then thereby, have it backfire and hurt. But I just want to tell you I'm enthusiastic. Thank you.
Is there, and I've not looked at your proposed legislation at all, because it's not the appropriate time, I guess, but is there any possibility of combining the two in some way?
Mr. Chair, no, there isn't, because as I stated before, is that the resolutions have to be as close as possible so that it shows the intent of the states to meet for the same purposes. And that's why you'll see more than one, is because there are other movements out there to, for instance, take care of the budget and how it's out of control. And so if the balanced budget would pass, which Alaska already has done many years ago, would be that they would come for that purpose only. So if you change our resolution, it'll sound nice, it'll make our people feel like we're doing something for them, and in reality it will do nothing because it won't match the other states.
I see. So this resolution here, this matches the other states?
Mr. Chair, very closely. I think maybe one or two words. I think Georgia changed a word, but it didn't change the meaning of it. But the closer that we can keep them together, the better they are. And what I find fascinating is that our founding fathers, not knowing where we would be today, gave us a provision, which just to me just shows that although they knew that we needed some type of government, but that government always has that tendency to get out of control, because they didn't have to put this in there. So, they really wanted to always make sure that the states, that portion of it, always had an opportunity to be able to pretty much put in check a bigger form of government. And to me, that's just unbelievable that you'd have them sitting there and realize that something like that could happen many, many years later.
Okay, any question at this point? Excuse me. Let's go to Representative Hughes first.
Thank you, Representative Wilson, for bringing this forward. I've been tracking this, and I have a lot of constituents very interested in this. And lots of times we hear about the $17 trillion debts that the federal government is carrying, but we don't add in I think it's over $50 trillion more for Social Security and other things. It's just staggering, and the burden on our on my grandchildren and everyone's grandchildren, just it's not right. So I really appreciate this. One of the questions that I have, and I have talked with other legislators from other states, and there is momentum, and I understand there was a Mount Vernon Assembly bipartisan effort, and that 33 states showed up to discuss this around the table. Can you speak to how this might be related to that? And also, I find it fascinating that this is the first time it's been used, and I the importance of keeping the language. I understand that if we want to reach the 34 states, if there's a lot of language change, then the count it might not be counted. The aggregate count might not be what it needs to be. So I think that's important for us to remember. But can you talk about, are you familiar with the Mount Vernon Assembly and how this relates to that?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, unfortunately I was unable to attend, but I received the reports from others that did. I think it was just a starter. It was saying you're not alone out there. You're not the only state being hit with this. It was times for them to be able to share stories of what was happening there, because I think a lot of times you're so busy trying to, take care of what's happening in your own community, much less your own state, and to show that it's not just one thing that's happening, but it's happening across the nation without going through the proper procedures, which is Congress. We have organizations, and the EPA being one of the biggest ones, who just keep putting more and more regulations out, and the burden goes on the states, the financial part goes on to the states, and it's not just about the financial portion of it, but also what we're stunting the growth in, from resource development to small business to right now with the wetlands. Even if you want to do something on your private property, you now are required, to go to the Corps of Engineers. When did we ever think that would happen?
Any follow-up?
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. And Representative Wilson, thanks for bringing this forward. And we have a lot of folks in our combined areas that are very interested in this. And I was looking at a similar resolution with a similar company and then, or, you know, group, and then asking around because of its similar question to Representative Hughes. There are various movements afoot. So in as we pass this out, how will we be assured that we'll get enough states if there's all these other groups with maybe different calls, such as we know, somewhat specific amendments? This, I like this approach because it's a topical, so a lot of things can be discussed and amendment can come forward. But what about all these other groups that are also gaining momentum? And if everyone's fractured, how will we ever get it all together combined? Is there a way forward that you've heard?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, there are no guarantees. What happens, though, is that this stays on the books. And so as we pass it, we're able to talk to other states and hopefully tell them the questions that we received, the concerns that we had. They're not looking for this to be able to be done until possibly even 2016. For instance, Texas doesn't meet this year. They don't meet until next year. They meet every other year. It is. I think it's beholden to us to make sure that we go ahead and say, why did we choose this one over some others, or maybe there's more than one. But it will stay on the books. That's the way it's written, so that when that number of states gets there. And again, whether we get there or not, which I hope we do, I think it sends a very strong message to Congress that the more that step up to the plate and get there, and they know that, you know, it doesn't, you know, there's no sunset date on it. I would hope as they're looking at these other agencies, they slow it down because they have that opportunity. And the reason for being so clear is that it goes to Congress, and they're going to be looking at every reason to throw out this state or that state and make the process go longer, because if they were willing to put themselves into check, I wouldn't be sitting here right now with this resolution.
Right. Mr. Chair, I just would say all of the above then, every time we get one of these things. Yes.
Thank you very much. And I should have mentioned that Representative Millett has joined us, I don't know, about 15, 20 minutes ago. And thank you. Glad to have you here. And Representative Keller.
Yeah.
Next.
Thanks.
And then Representative Millett.
Thank you. There's just a couple things. Forgive me and indulge me a little bit. You know, I know this is not the discussion time for the bill, but Representative Hughes made the statement that why has this never been used? She asked the question. And that is that I may have misled, therefore I want to back up. It has been used many times. In fact, but it has never come to fruition. It has never gone all the way through. Here's one example of what happened, and I wish I could remember the date. And somebody online, I bet you will help me out here, but I think it was about 18, 20 or 30 or something like that. There was a convention of the states, and there was only four that got together. And it was to limit the term limit of the president. And the Congress looked at that, saw the states getting up in the air, and they hurried up and they amended it. So one of the amendments to the Constitution, you see, is a direct result of the Convention of the States. The Convention of the States has never gotten to the two-thirds or the three-fourths, to fruition, except, I won't say that, but, I mean, maybe you could count the first one, but, I mean, other than that, it's never happened. But it has been used. Mount Vernon Assembly, the other thing. I was privileged to be there, and what they are doing is trying to propose and trying to get our heads together as far as coming up with rules for a convention, how it operate. And that's the way, it's so new. This whole concept of conventions is new to us, but it's not new to history. And the rules have been tried, put in place, and are pretty acceptable. From before the time the Constitution was accepted, it was international law at the time. And so the process is there. But the Mount Vernon Assembly is there to try to identify the rules at which, you know, if we can proceed on this, that we'll have them together and maybe some unity on it. So, again, thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Millett.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Wilson, for bringing this. I've spent most of my legislative career fighting the federal government. But what I wanted to say is that there's an opportunity. We have as you go farther west in the United States, we have the same commonality with western states that are predominantly federally owned lands. As the states moved farther west, the federal government kept more and more land. So I think we have some natural allies in the western states. So I'm hoping that at some point in time we can take this to CSG West or some of the other organizations that we belong to as a state and talk to them, because I think they'd be willing to join in and mimic our legislation. We've had several opportunities to work with them on ANWR and other issues, Keystone Pipeline. So this is a perfect opportunity for us to reach out to our, you know, brother states that have the same exact issues that we have with, you know, EPA, with the ESA listing. So I'm hoping that after this passes, because I'm sure it will, that we take it on our trips with us when we go down to visit with other states and encourage them to follow us. At least we could get a Western States coalition together that that we could have a larger voice and make your, you know, your presence known and the whole Western States presence known about how unhappy we are with the decisions that have been made by the federal government.
Thank you. Representative Kreis Tompkins. And
thank you, Chair Lynn. My question is, I guess, sort of a follow-up on a question asked about 5 minutes ago. And you mentioned that the resolution has been introduced in, say, the Georgia Senate, and I was looking through the committee notes, and you can see that the joint resolution has been introduced across America.
A little louder, please.
Absolutely. So what states has the resolution already made it through the state legislative process and been ratified by a state legislature? How many states and which states?
Richard Craig Tompkins, through the chair, none. The Georgia is the furthest. They passed it out of their Senate here just a couple days before, and Alaska's a great state. We'd really like to be first. Thank you.
Thank you.
Reverend Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe, I'm not sure, I was thumbing through things late last night, but I believe CSG, there is perhaps, has been some conversation on this topic, and even informally, and perhaps model legislation floated. I'm quite sure, but I've seen it, and I've heard it discussed when I've been in other venues among a number of state legislators, and western states are interested. And in fact, the other legislation that has been mentioned here, that one also I've heard about from other states. I wanted to ask one thing about the time factor, and that is, and I believe I saw this in the packet too, that if we were to pass it this year, but it took a few years to get up to the third, is it 34 states? That's okay, because ours would hold on in perpetuity, is that correct?
Representative Hughes, to the chair, absolutely.
Okay.
Good question. Any other comments from the committee right now? Okay, I'd like to call on Michael Ferris. Are you online, sir?
I am here, yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Fine. Please introduce yourself and who you are affiliated with and talk to the bill.
Thank you so much. My name is Michael Ferris. I'm a constitutional attorney. My full-time job is I'm the chancellor of Patrick Henry College in Virginia, where I teach constitutional law. I'm originally from the Pacific Northwest, went to Gonzaga Law School, and I am the director of this Convention of the States project, and one of the people that helped draft the model resolution that your legislation is based on. This is the first year that this particular Article 5 effort has been undertaken, and we have, without any really fear of being contradicted, this is the fastest growing, the biggest version of an Article 5 process, because the discussion that you've all been having about various issues of Western lands, the EPA, there's a lot of problems with the federal government that go beyond the balanced budget. All the other efforts that are, you know, that are material and have any kind of momentum at all are focused just on the balanced budget. But we realize that the problems that we're facing are broader than that, and that particularly federal interference with the states is a really big issue. So ours is the only resolution that's focused on federal interference with the states and federal jurisdictional problems of a broader scope, where the president's allowed to make law through executive order, and where the various agencies are just simply interfering in our lives, both in the processes of the state governments and in private businesses, in ways that the founders never intended. And the fundamental problem is that Washington, D.C. is never, ever, ever going to curtail its own power. And so the founders gave us this method for this very purpose. There have been over 400 applications from the states in the history of the Republic, but as was said earlier, we've never gotten to two-thirds. But we're on a fast track to do this. This effort is brand new. We're early in the legislative process. As we speak, the Virginia House of Delegates is debating this right now to see if they're going to pass it in that first chamber in Virginia. We expect Georgia's House to take it up soon. I'm being asked to testify in Louisiana. I've been asked to come to Missouri. It's moving there. And so we really are going to see quite a bit of movement this session. But we believe in 2 or 3 years, we will get to 34 states, whereas for the balanced budget, it's been around like for 40 years trying to get it. The difficulty is the people want a solution that's as big as the problem. And our approach, which parallels almost identically Mark Levin's book, The Liberty Amendment, is an accident that it was so close. We launched our website 10 days before his book was released, but it's a really happy accident. We actually view it as providential. But we're aimed at getting to 34 states rapidly, calling a convention, and having a real opportunity to correct federal overreach and protect the states and protect our citizens. So I think maybe the best thing to do would be for me to answer questions, because I've litigated an Article 5 case when the Equal Rights Amendment was Congress tried to change the process in the middle of the stream. I represented 4 Washington state legislators in the late 1970s. The case spilled over the early 80s in that litigation. And so I have Article 5 litigation experience. I teach constitutional law, and I help write this resolution. So I'd be able and willing to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, any questions? Representative Hughes.
Yes, thank you for being available to us today. And this is Shelley Hughes. I represent Palmer here in Alaska. And this is unique in that it's calling for a convention based on a subject or a topic restricting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government rather than a particular amendment. And I know the sponsor touched on it, but could you explain how, when you open it to a subject rather than limiting it to a single amendment that's clearly defined, how we can be assured that it won't be a runaway train?
The agenda for the convention is set by the resolution. The 400 applications never reached fruition because they didn't hit the trigger. The trigger is you have to have an agreement on the subject matter. And there are 3 ways that states could write the subject matter. You could have a single amendment, or you could have a single topic, which is what we have. In short, we're trying to limit the power of Washington, D.C. And then third, you could just say, we want a convention to consider any and all amendments. And nobody wants that. So it would be like proposing the Bill of Rights. In fact, the very first application ever passed of the 400 was from Virginia. They passed it in November of 1788. We actually got filed in Congress the following year. But it was just like this. It was for the topic of, in shorthand, for introducing the Bill of Rights. And it would be just like the Bill of Rights. If we get 6 or 7 amendments out of the convention, then the Bill of Rights were sent out. There were 12 proposed amendments. 10 were ratified by 1791, and the other 2 lay there for a long time. 1 got ratified in the 1990s. But each one is considered individually. But anything that's outside the topic wouldn't be germane. So, one on Western lands, that would be germane. It's a rule of germaneness. If there was something about the Second Amendment introduced, that would not be germane, because we've not put the Bill of Rights on the table. It's simply limiting federal power. So term limits on federal courts, that would be germane. And so I think you will see something aimed at federal spending, something aimed at federal debt, federal regulation, and the power of the courts, for sure. Those are the big four that I think will almost certainly come out of the convention. And but anything that goes beyond that subject matter would be illegal. And as the litigation that I did was done in Boise, Idaho, in the federal court there, the ruling of that court was that if you change the process in the middle of the stream, that's unconstitutional. And so since the process is started by the state legislatures, and they say this is the agenda, you can't go outside the agenda, the convention itself can't change the agenda. They can pass things that are consistent with the agenda, but they cannot change it.
Any question?
Follow up, and it's just because I didn't quite catch it. You mentioned four things that you thought it might touch upon: spending, debt, courts. What
sure.
was the fourth? What was the fourth one?
Regulations.
Spending, debt, federal regulations, and better checks and balance on the federal judiciary.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Representative Keller.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael, for joining us. I really appreciate what you're doing. Because the United States of America, we as citizens, have not really dealt much with conventions, I was wondering what your organization is doing to help, I don't want to say educate, well, get the word out, you know, because there's a lot of questions out there, a lot of concerns by Alaskans and for example, of the potential hazards that come, and we have Don Brand here who's going to speak to us in a little bit, and I know that he is working with you and for you, but what's the extent of your help coming to us as, in getting the word out and helping us educate each other on this process?
Well, we're dedicated to building a grassroots network that both education and, you know, our motto is show up, stand up, speak up. And we are deliberately focused on making sure that in 75% of the legislative districts of the country, we have educated enough people that they're willing to become active, so that there's at least 100 people in these districts that will help us not only get the applications through the 34 state level, but to get the amendments approved and ratified when we go to the last stage in ratification, and we need 38 states. So we are working, and the two of us that are the overall directors of the project both have long-term grassroots experience. I am the founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and have done homeschool grassroots politics for 32 years now, I guess it is. And so I've helped that movement. In fact, I'll be at Alaska's Homeschool Conference speaking this year. And so I have substantial grassroots educational experience, and we're using all those networks to do that. Mark Meckler, who's the president of Citizens for Self-Governance, is our sponsoring group. He's the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots in the country, the largest Tea Party group. And so Mark and I together are making sure that we are, you know, broadly educating people, recruiting people, going to the grassroots, making sure that we've got the momentum in place, because ultimately, unless the citizens understand this and get behind it, we will not be successful. And so all the raw materials are there, because, you know, only 9% of the American public approves the job of Congress. And what that means is that's a general dissatisfaction in Washington, D.C. So the time is right. The need is now. And we are going to do our level best to educate a good number of the public. Mark Levin's after this. Glenn Beck is going to do a show on it today. There are a lot of people that are educating the public about it. And Mike Huckabee sent out a letter to his whole email list endorsing our specific Convention of States application, endorsing me this week. He sent that voluntarily out to his entire mailing list. So we're on track to do that to the best of our ability.
Just follow up on his points, Vice Chair Keller.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just want to know if you, in this process, if you view this as a partisan process, what's happening in the other states? I mean, as I see it, it's really important that this is not a partisan issue, and I just wondered if you'd comment on that.
Well, it shouldn't be partisan. We, in the Virginia Rules Committee, which is the first vote taken in Virginia, we did get some Democrat votes. It was mostly Republican votes, but we did get some Democrat votes in that in that particular chamber. The Mount Vernon Assembly, there were a few Democrats present, there are some. The reality is it should not be partisan at all, because if you go to Berkeley, California, which is, you know, one of the more liberal communities in the country, and ask Berkeley, do you want the rules for Berkeley made by Berkeley or Sacramento, or do you want them made by Washington, D.C.? Even in Berkeley, they will tell you they want the rules made by Berkeley. And I also believe that, you know, that as was mentioned here, the Western Lands Coalition issues, our application would give us the ability to deal with that. And having grown up in Washington State myself, I know this from personal experience. I grew up working on a farm part-time, and in fact, our family owned a little farm of strawberries when I was a kid. And so I understand the impact of the federal government on Western land and farmlands and mining and, you know, all that kind of thing. And I think that we've got some ability to get a Washington and an Oregon that are, you know, much more democratically oriented than some of the other Western states. I think we can get them on board, largely because of the Western lands issue. And our application is the only one that has a really germaneness that would allow that to be addressed. So we want it to be bipartisan. Realistically, we're getting more Republican support than Democrat at the moment, but we're trying our best.
Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Michael, for being online and testifying to this. To the point that Representative Keller had made at the very beginning about the getting out the message, I want to commend you for how you are getting out the message, and the material that you have actually is the best primer, short of reading Mark Levin's book, for this, and I learned a lot by reading that material. And having been a fellow Washingtonian as a kid, my brothers and sisters might have actually picked some of those strawberries off of your parents' farms. I remember those early days. But I'm glad to hear that it's also partisan, and that was part of what I wanted, because in the Western states we have so many liberal legislators, and I was going to comment on that as well. Many of us are no longer in Washington, for example, because it just micromanages everybody. Do you see much help coming from the home state in this? Is there anyone leading the pack? You mentioned Oregon, and I perked up with that one too. How likely is it to get some of these states in Nevada and so forth, where they have significant people who might be opposed to this because of their position in D.C.?
Well, I think that we're counting on Nevada as being one of the states to get 34. That's because Nevada, although it's democratically controlled, is one of the most conservative Democrat states in the country. With my homeschool hat on, I worked on parents' rights legislation last year, and it passed overwhelmingly in Nevada. And so we know that Nevada is capable of doing things that are, you know, for the rights of the people and local control and more conservatively oriented things, even despite the Democratic control. Washington, I've made a really close study of the districts in Washington and who holds the seats and so on. And I believe that there's enough rurally held Democratic seats to add to the Republicans that we can win in Washington State, because unfortunately, the common denominator here is not really Republican or Democrat. It's urban and more suburban, and urban versus the rest of the country. The urban districts just really tend to believe that the purpose of government is to provide for their needs. Rural areas, more suburban areas, think that the purpose of government is to protect life, liberty, and property. And so I think that there's enough rurally held Democrat seats in Washington State that we can move this through that state, and we're going to make a really concentrated effort. Yes, we do have some interest there. Some of the people that I left Washington State in 1982, but some of the people that were my friends in the legislature there, you know, like two or three of them that are still there, We've got some traction, and we're going to make a really serious run at Washington. And the Western Lands issue will be front and center in our appeal to Washington.
Follow up. So, because you're moving with such speed, and because you're confident of success, what happens when a convention of state is called? What do you see the next step that the legislators have to take as far as choosing delegates? We don't have that in the bill, and I imagine that'll be a companion piece once the call has been adopted and a convention actually is formed. What do you see the next step for as far as selecting delegates?
The next step would be to pass a resolution naming your delegate. And, you know, each state can name whatever reasonable number of delegates they want because it's one state, one vote at the convention. My own recommendation is that you name 9 or 11 so that you make sure that you have enough votes there of responsible people that if somebody gets a crazy idea, one person isn't going to affect how Alaska votes. And so I think you need to name people that have background and experience on the purposes of government and share the values that led to the resolution. So if you do that, then I think we'd be great. You know, you need to count on Alaska sending some of the best people because, frankly, your philosophy is one of the best in the country in terms of wanting limited government and local control. I mean, Alaska, for really good and sufficient reasons, understand that issue better than just about anybody else.
One more follow-up.
At that point in time, you can give them and should give them instruction. And, and every convention ever held, whether it's for water purposes or, you know, there have been 32 conventions in the history of the country. Not once have delegates ever violated the instructions given to them by their state legislatures. And that's who needs the instruction. You give them instructions, tell them what to do, and they'll go do it.
So
one quick follow-up.
Brief follow-up, and I think you might have captured it in your last sentence there. So of all the methods of choosing delegates, you're suggesting probably the best informed would be to come from the legislatures.
Yes, absolutely. I think that members of the legislature would be great. I think, having some non-legislators, some citizen activists to help get this process through would be also a very appropriate thing to do. So there's some balance there, but people with legislative experience would be absolutely invaluable.
No, what I meant, Mr. Chair, was that the legislature would pick the delegates and not another convention or something.
Well, either way, I would think that.
I'm just asking.
Legislators, of course, are elected. We're answerable to the public, to our constituents. So there's some connection like that between, the people and ones that they might send to the convention.
Right. There's been various methods that have been proposed, such as calling a convention to select delegates and so forth, or legislators pick them and.
But
so
that's a little ways down the path here.
Well, maybe not, if the speed that this group is taking continues. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Just very quick, Mr. Chair. Representative Isaacson, through the chair. That could be done in legislation so that there could be a full debate on how we want to choose ours. I think every state will be unique on how they do it, and it would be one vote, one state. And so, I don't want to jump the gun and make it look like we're going to send just legislators or, we're going to do that because get this passed, and then that will be another discussion for another day.
Right. While we had him online, I was just asking.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for being a resource here for us online. Another question that I have, you mentioned the incredibly low approval rating of Congress, and my understanding, a lot of your work has focused on getting legislators on board in the various states, and rightfully so. I'm just wondering how much public education of American citizens is underway regarding this effort. I know that there are certain people who are very keyed in and very politically active who are watching and following and on board, but just the general public is. Is there any public education going on, or is there any planned?
Yes, I'm actually stopped on a wayside right now, sitting by a Burger King on the way to an airport to fly to go do a public debate in front of 500 people in Sarasota, Florida, on this issue this weekend. And I've got debates planned in Oklahoma and other venues that are coming. I've been on Mike Huckabee's television show. Mark Levin's book on this subject was the number one bestseller on the New York Times list for several weeks. We're doing media. We've hired a media consultant to help us get on more television stations. We're putting out radio programs. We're putting out materials. We are using social media. We are doing everything we can. We have a pretty good sized staff, and we have decent resources, and we are using those to educate the public, because I'm absolutely convinced that it's wonderful to talk to legislators, the ultimate, success of this program comes at the grassroots level. If we don't have, I think it takes about 3 million people who are willing to be educated and active on this to make it happen nationwide. And so that's our goal, and we're spending a lot of time and resources on that. Doing a lot of media, a lot of writing, a lot of web activity, and so the organizations that I work on a day-to-day basis with homeschoolers and so on, I spoke about this at the National Leadership Conference. We're doing a lot of things. I don't want to go into all of them just in the interest of time, but you have my assurance that we are doing our level best to broadly educate the American public.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for your work on that.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions for this gentleman? I want to thank you very much for a very good view of this, because this is something very, very, well, it's not unique, but it's very, very important, and you have the background for this. Now, I'm going to ask, will you stay online, sir, or do you have other engagements in case we have some other questions?
It would be helpful if I could I can still listen, but I need to start driving often when I miss the plane. But I'll stay on and listen, and if you need to talk to me, I'll pull over and stop again.
Okay. You can even drive, as far as I'm concerned, but that's another issue.
Might not be legal.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I'm gonna be offline for I keep my phone in, but I need to step away to the Burger King for just a minute, and then I'll be right back listening the rest of your hearing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please keep in touch with us. I'm going to ask some students from Tri-Valley High School to testify next, because they need to get back to class. I have a name of Taylor Hancock, Sabrina Byfligan, Nicole McMaster, and Isabella Sachs. What order do you want to go in, or should I just go down the list? I'm going to call on Taylor first.
Hello, thank you for letting us testify.
Okay, and please identify yourself and give us your comments on this.
All right. Well, my name is Taylor Hancock, and I am a junior at Tri-Valley High School in Healy, Alaska. And I am testifying today with other members of my government class on the resolution to apply to Congress on the House Joint Resolution 22. I'd like to start off my argument by talking about one of the most often claimed defects of the Articles of Confederation, which was its lack of a grant to the central government the power to lay and collect taxes. This made it so that Congress had to rely on requisitions upon the government of its members of states. Some of these states were not giving Congress the funds for which it asked by either paying it only in parts or altogether ignoring Congress's request. Congress quickly realized this limitation and proposed amendments to the Articles in an effort to supersede it. However, nothing came out of these proposals until the Philadelphia Convention. The power to tax is a concurrent power of the federal government and the individual states. The power of taxation has been received over time as a broad but in occasion has been curtailed by the courts. The direct text from the Constitution states that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Thomas Jefferson had a very strong view on the general welfare and believed strongly in the Constitution and that it should be strongly enforced in our government. He stated, to lay taxes to provide for the general welfare of the United States, that is to say, to lay taxes for the purpose of providing for the general welfare. For the laying of taxes is the power and general welfare, the purpose for which the power is to be exercised. They are not to lay taxes and libitum for any purpose they please, but only to pay the debts or provide for the welfare of the Union. What I have perceived from this statement is that we should reel in the government by going back to the Constitution and giving them the bare minimum of their constitutionally written powers. As a student, I am seeing how the government is starting to careen out of control in an uncontrollable whirlpool of debt. On another note, talking about the Commerce Clause refers to the Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution, which gives Congress the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states, and with the Indian tribes. The Constitution enumerates certain powers for the federal government. The Tenth Amendment provides that many powers that are not enumerated in the Constitution are reserved for the states. Congress has often used the Commerce Clause to justify exercising legislative power over the activities of the states and their citizens, leading to significant ongoing controversy regarding the balance of powers between the federal government and the states. In conclusion, my argument stands strong. My view is that we should reel in the government and give them their powers that are as defined in the Constitution and nothing else.
Thank you very much. Well said. Any question? Thank you. Sabrina Bafuglian?
Are you there? Yeah, hi.
Hi. Please identify yourself. And
hi. My name is Sabrina Bufflin, and I'm a junior at Tri Valley School. I am here with a few students from my government class, and we believe that there has been too much power vested in the federal government and not enough in the states. This is not how it should be. An example of the government taking away state sovereignty is in our education curriculum. Most of the decisions about this are made by the national government when they should be being made by the state government, such as you folks in Juneau. I'd like to address that this is what our founding fathers truly planned for our country, and I have a few quotes to show you. From Federalist Paper number 39, each state in ratifying the Constitution is considered as a sovereign body, independent of all others, and only to be bound by its own voluntary acts. In this relation, then, the new Constitution will, if established, be a federal and not a national constitution. And this was cementing that the states will have the rights after signing the Constitution and can stay independent. And I have another from Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper number 32. But as the plan of the convention aims only at a partial union or consolidation, the state governments would clearly retain all rights of sovereignty which they before had, and which were not the acts exclusively delegated to the United States. And this shows that Alexander Hamilton believed the states should always have sovereign power. And from Thomas Jefferson, when government fear the people, there's liberty. When the people feel the government, there's tyranny. And this is what I'm afraid of, that our government will become too powerful and we will all end up fearing them. There should be more state sovereignty. And lastly, from Thomas Jefferson, when all government, domestic and foreign, in little as in great things, shall be drawn to Washington as the center of all power, it will render powerless the checks provided of one government on another and will become as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated. And this is saying that the federal government doesn't need to be brought into all of Alaska's little business. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much. Again, well said. Nicole McMaster.
Hi. My name is Nicole McMaster, and I'm a junior at Tri-Valley. I want to talk about the regulatory spending and debt crisis. The information about the regulatory crisis I got from Joe Isabelli. He's the owner of the Isabelli coal mine. He said the federal government passed a law that led regulations states can permit air permits and water discharges originated at the federal level. Now, however, it's at the state. Federal Environmental, EPA, maintains on the federal level, working over the shoulder of the state. and the federal government needs to abide by the state, not the EPA. Involved in the EPA standards, PM215, they threaten to take over. State has the ability to take away programs through the EPA. However, it's costly, time-consuming, and they have to keep up with all the regulations. Federal government, Department of Interior, is putting more pressure on the states to interpret their own regulations. The government doesn't have the right to tell the state what regulations to make. State regulators want to maintain a relationship with the federal government, but it's harm. Harm that the EPA does to this company is it's extremely expensive, and the legal expenses are also very high. Recently, the government has put more regulations on the states. So I say the government should keep their nose out of it, and it should be run by the states. Our country is $17 trillion in debt to other nations. Most of the debt is a result of control, out-of-control federal government spending. What most people don't know is that in just the U.S., we are $60 trillion in debt. That means that every single U.S. citizen is about $200,000 in debt. I'm 16, and I already owe the government more than going to an average college is going to cost. There's a lot about this country's debt that I don't understand. But what I have found is that the U.S. is still the stabilizer for other states. And unlike when nations held their own, it's now like a world nation. When other countries' market crashes, ours lowers, and vice versa. If people are going bankrupt and cities are going bankrupt, then won't states and eventually our country? At our dinner table, if our budget is zero, we can't do things we want. We don't have the power to just print more money and raise the debt ceiling. We need to start paying our debt, or everyone is going to go bankrupt if we don't. The Federal Reserve purchases treasuries from its member banks using credit it created out of thin air. This has the same effect as printing money. It keeps interest rates low, avoiding high interest rate penalties the federal government would usually impose for excessive debt. Our government is out of control with its spending. The government is racking up so much debt, it's going to become a huge financial mess for my generation. It's like a pile of dog poop laying on the beach. The government just keeps pushing some sand over the top to cover it up. But when someone new comes along, like my generation, we're going to get a nasty footful of dog poop. It is my hope that you will be able to leave feeling like you've left something behind my generation can be proud of. So I fully support Tammy Wilson's resolution. Thank you for your time and allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much.
I'm voting
for those are good talking points for the future here. Isabella Sachs.
Hello. I know we touched on some of these points earlier, but I would just like to discuss some of the opposition to this Convention of States. And the primary opposition to this proposition seems to be the fear of a runaway convention. We would like to explain what has already been instituted to prevent this. Our country has been built on the principle that mankind is imperfect and we need checks and balances. Conventions of states are no exception. When we call for this convention, we are asking for it to be called with a limited scope of topics and issues we are to discuss, only after Congress receives 34 similar applications. Congress will then specify the scope, ensuring that we don't stray from the issues we had planned, to also make sure that we don't come out with an amendment even remotely unrelated to what was proposed. If that were in some way to happen, in spite of the previous checks, where out of this convention came an unrelated amendment, there's another check for that. It is Congress's mandatory duty to deny ratification. Ratification itself is even a check. 38 states must vote to ratify any amendments to the Constitution, and ratification is not an easy idea to sell. When the state of Alaska sends delegates to this convention, you can limit the amendments that our delegates can discuss. If they happen to go beyond their scope, they can be recalled. If delegates going past the scope is still a concern, you can do what Indiana has done and pass legislation that pulls controls on their delegates to an Article 5 convention. These conventions cannot make up their own rules or change existing ones to make ratification an easier process. That's not the way the system is set up. The Founding Fathers clearly laid out what to do in times like these, and we are ignoring our duty as Americans when we ignore Article 5, when we ignore the very directions we have a responsibility to carry out. When the government has plainly overstepped its boundaries and burdened us with tremendous debt, we have the obligation to act, and speaking for the generation that will grow up in this country, We don't want to grow up amongst piles and piles of debt. Once again, we're students from a government class in Healy, Alaska. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you very, very much for your testimony, all of you. I would respond to that, and I would go along. I'd like to have each and all of you to place in a written copy of your testimony to the sponsor of the bill, Representative Wilson, and perhaps to each of us on the committee, and you can find our committee names and addresses on the Internet someplace. And if I'm ever called on to make a speech on this subject someplace, you're welcome to help me write that speech. And I hope your testimony has been so good. I would hope at some point in the future, not next year or year after perhaps, but to consider running for public office yourself. So, again, thank you for your testimony. Look at this, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, and who, do you have your teacher there with you?
Yeah.
And would you identify yourself, please? Would your teacher identify yourself?
Yes, sir. General Frisbee. Yeah, we have the whole government class listening on here.
Okay, great. I believe Representative Keller had a comment or question.
Thank you. Daryl, in about an hour, I have a bill up in another committee, and it's on mandating the public schools to teach the values of American constitutionalism in class, and maybe you have just soundly demonstrated that there's not much need for it, really. But I also want to say you didn't catch me. I made a really bad misstatement earlier. I said that was in the 1800s about the term limits. That was 1940 that that attempt was made on that. And I'm sure that the online people have noted that. And what I was thinking about is the largest attempt, which was an attempt by the states to stop the Civil War. And that was in 1861, I think. But anyway,
right.
I just wanted to correct that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
My face
got
red.
Definitely take a look at your proposed bill there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. And we have some other folks we need to hear from. We are getting pushing down the clock here. We do have two other bills I'd like to consider. So I'd ask the other people going to testify to try to limit their comments as much as possible. Also to permit us to have time to ask you some questions, perhaps. So with that, I'd like to call on Christine Hutchinson. Are you there?
Yes, thank you. Gentlemen, I am here.
Yes, please identify yourself. Yes, hear you loud and clear. 5x5.
My name is Christine Hutchinson, and I am in Kenai, Alaska. I've been following the Convention of States issue since November before they held the Mount Vernon Assembly, and I'm very concerned and interested in this, and because of that, I volunteered to be a district leader here on the peninsula to get the word out among these people, and hopefully using social media as many of my friends in other states as I can. I believe, just like the kids that testified earlier, the students that testified earlier, this is a critical issue for our entire nation and for Alaska. And I just think it's, you know, it's got a lot of steps to go to fruition. So it could fall off the rails anywhere. But doing a small part today of moving this resolution on so it can be passed by the other house and put Alaska, not just the largest state in the union, but the biggest one, to come forward and identify a serious problem. So I appreciate very much your efforts today in listening to all this, and the efforts of the people who travel to Mount Vernon and who are willing to push this forward with us. So I just want to say, if there's any, you have already heard from me, you have emailed from me, each one of you on the State Affairs Committee. And so I will be staying in touch with you or with the next committee. I'm real anxious for this to go through, as I'm sure the students were too. So I won't hold up things. I'll let you move on because I need to get back to work. But I'm going to be watching, just like I hope, and I'm going to be getting a lot of other people from the Kenai Peninsula to be watching as well. And hopefully we can be, I would like to see us get it through the House and the Senate this year and just jump right out there as the largest and most interested in this project. So thank you very much for the time, and I will let someone else step forward.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Any questions? Okay, if not, I'd like to go next to David Eichler. Are you there, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me begin by saying I'm an active proponent and advocate of this resolution, and I just want to tell the story of how I came to this position. Last summer, the Alaska Legislature held a commission on the federal overreach, held hearings to publicize and address the concerns and problems of an overbearing federal government. And I remember thinking at the time that I agree with this, and this is all true, but rather cynically, I thought, why bother? These bureaucrats and agencies will do whatever they want, claiming federal preemption and supremacy. But then in August, my brother asked me to go down to the Reagan Library in Southern California to hear a lecture presentation by Mark Levin to discuss his book, The Liberty Amendment, and we talked about that earlier today. I hadn't read the book, but I did know the basic content of it, and I had many of the boilerplate arguments as to why it was a bad idea to hold a convention like it'd get out of control, and the communists and the Bilderbergs and other conspiracy people would take control and seize control of the government and that sort of thing. But I decided to go down to listen to it, and I heard a compelling argument that the problems of the federal government were such that this was the only way and the only effective solution to those problems. In simple terms, we have a runaway, out-of-control federal government already, which recognizes no limits to its power and control, and that all of the three branches exist, there's authority for self-restraint, but all three refuse to exercise that control, and that in the wisdom and foresight of the writers of the Constitution, they recognize the inevitability of this happening, and they provided Article 5 as a means for reasserting the primacy of the people through their state legislatures. Our nation exists as a compact of the several states delegating certain authority to the federal government and retaining all remaining authority. The first three words of the Constitution are we the people, not we the Congress, or I the President, or we the courts, or we the lawyers. Through your commission last summer, you were stating to the federal government that they had exceeded their authority. This convention of states is the method to remedy that problem. I came home from that meeting, that lecture series, wanting to do something. So I started researching the issue and the problem and found this organization called the Convention of States that had just formed. And the difficulty of amending the Constitution by this process is that 34 states need to apply to Congress, and Congress decides if there are, in fact, 34 applications calling for the same thing. But now we have, working together through this organization and through the meeting of legislatures at Mount Vernon, we have a coordinated effort to address the problem and approve the applications of substantial similarity in the necessary 34 states. Because we know that Congress will not willingly cede any of its power willingly, we are being careful to make it impossible for them to reject the necessary applications. I volunteered to be the state director of COS and began by visiting the offices of our legislators here in Fairbanks and North Pole. I found enthusiastic support, and I think you've heard that today. We've built a network of volunteers throughout the state for education and support, and we're speaking to various groups to build that support. And the groundswell of this support is really amazing, and all this in the last 4 or 5 months. Let me close with this. When you consider the Bill of Rights, many of them have their own advocacy group as watchdogs to see that the rights are upheld. We have the ACLU and others for the First Amendment, and the NRA and others for the Second Amendment, and attorney groups for several others. But for the Tenth Amendment, the only advocate we have are the state legislatures. And Article 5 is the constitutional mechanism given to you to use and maintain this constitutional order. Mr. Chairman, I ask for the committee's enthusiastic support and urge approval of the HGR 22. And thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like to ask either the sponsor or you, sir, got this organization, is there any funding coming from any place for this effort to have the convention of the states? Somebody answer that. Let me go to Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, as far as I have seen, there's been no funding going on. They're actually asking for volunteers throughout the state and into each, most places that have counties or boroughs to literally grassroots root it up, because we are just really tired. The federal government. So I have seen no money being.
But is there a coordinating group? You know, we're talking about several different states here. We're trying to do this in. I'm sure there's some money required. You know, for postage and whatever. Is there a coordinating national group that's pushing this? And if so, how is it funded?
Mr. Chair, as far as I know, I'm sure there's some fundraising going on it, and I could get back, you know, to you and tell you specifically where some funding has been going to. But I know at least for the state of Alaska, they're all volunteers.
Okay, thank you. I had a hand down here. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. And thank you, Dave, for being on board. The questions earlier were from the committee asking how word is getting out, and you are the one who has really gotten the word out to a lot of us. I know you were the one who first made this a more heightened awareness on my scope. But similar to what the chair was asking, as a state director, are there other state directors that you're communicating with? And if so, what's the progress in other states?
Thank you. To the chair, there are currently 40 states that have statewide volunteer leadership. And currently there are 9 states with a filed or pre-filed application for the resolution. So yes, and I do communicate with them on a several times a day, daily basis. Recently, the effort in Georgia to pass their resolution through their committee and through the Senate was involved in that communication project. So. Yes, I'm spending a lot of time on this, and it's all my own funds and efforts. The national organization receives, contribution. They are an educational service, so they are an entity that you can contribute to, but all of the efforts that our volunteers in the state are all self-funded. We don't receive any outside money. We need a poster or some paperwork. We print it on our own dime and get out there and do the legwork to get it out.
Mr. Chair,
follow up.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave, for your passion and your efforts, tireless in this, and how you're helping to organize others. And Christina was on the Kenai, evidently, in this. Is there going to be a point in time when you feel that you may need a capital lift, or are you planning to do this all with privately raised funds? And if
well,
so, where should we send the contribution?
Our goal, Mr. Chairman, is to have the legislature pass a resolution, and then that's our effort. And so far, it's progressing really well in Alaska. I think what we're doing is just building on the already existing dissatisfaction we have in the state with the federal government. If it was a really hard effort, like it's going to be in Washington and possibly Oregon, which I may become involved with, funding might be an issue, but as long as I'm finding success with what we're doing, I'm going to continue doing that. And so,
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony, sir. We have three other people signed up. We have Mr. Seymour Mills, Tom Buzzard, and somebody in the chamber here. Put on my glasses for that one, but we're going to try to get to all three of you. Mr. Mills, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, please identify yourself and make your comments briefly as possible because time is flying by here.
Yeah. Seymour Mills, Sterling, Alaska. A convention of the states will change nothing except to get a constitutional convention, which will result in us losing the constitution we have, which is exactly what the powers that be want. We don't need any new amendments. All we need is to enforce the original constitution, which is not being done. A convention cannot be limited or controlled, and that was proven with the original convention in 1787. Think, people. Don't push this.
Thank you. Any comments from the sponsor on that?
Mr. Chair, you know, there's always going to be people who, you know, and he's not completely incorrect. You know, Congress should be doing what they're supposed to do. I wish they would. I wouldn't have to try to pass the bills I do here if they would. But the reality for me at this point is they're not doing what they're supposed to do, and it is for us, the state, to stand up for residents and make sure that happens.
Well, this won't do that.
Thank you, sir.
Hope springs eternal, I guess.
Yep.
Is Tom Buzzard there?
Hi, I'm here. This is Tom Buzzard.
I'm sorry I mispronounced your name there.
Oh, no worries, sir. I want to apologize for not appearing in person. Myself and a number of other folks that wanted to appear there today are ill.
I'm glad you didn't come. I will be very brief.
There's really not much more for me to add that hasn't already been said by other folks in favor of this Senate resolution, or this House resolution, and I want to personally thank Representative Wilson for being willing to bring this forward. There are just a couple of quick points I would like to make. That the American people, and specifically the Alaskan people, are living in fear of the federal government. I really don't think there's an argument against the fact, and I believe it is a fact, that tyranny is here now. And we are the brave few that are willing to stand up and deal with this. And I think we need to keep moving forward. I'm excited about the fact that Alaska has the possibility of being the first state to pass a resolution. Certainly last year we gave the federal government some marching orders concerning their federal activities here in Alaska over firearms and the potential to seize firearms from Alaska residents. I believe that was House Bill 66, if I remember correctly, concerning misdemeanor charges against federal agents trying to enforce federal laws that were against Alaska state gun laws. One of the other big issues that it's been touched upon but hasn't been spoken of much is that what are we leaving to our children, our grandchildren? I'm only 56, and I remember how life used to be here in the United States prior to the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, and the magnitude of growth that the federal government has experienced is just completely out of control. And the amount of debt that's being left to our children is unconscionable. It's wrong. Our generation should pay for itself, not our grandchildren. I urge you to go forward with this House Resolution 22 and to pass it, and to speedily get it over to the Senate and get the Senate to pass it. And let's get out there in front and lead the charge on this. I'm sorry that Mr. Seymour Mills feels that this is a constitutional convention. Nothing could be further from the truth. A convention of the states is not a constitutional convention. Convention of the states is convened for the specific purposes of the items suggested. For instance, we're trying to rein in federal spending and out of control of federal government. It's got nothing to do with cracking open and fundamentally changing our Constitution. And with that, I'd like to pass on the mic to our next speaker, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Don Brand, is it? Please identify yourself and present your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Don Brand. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a scholar. I am a very concerned citizen. I became aware of the possibility of doing something to correct what I see as a growing list of federal abuses when I read Mark Levin's book. And it really energized me and made me feel I need to go out and somehow do something to get this ball moving and to support it. I don't think anybody in this room did, but there are people here in this building who've received copies of Mark's book, compliments of me. I thought it was necessary to start getting the word out. I've given you a handout. I'm not going to go through it in the interest of time. Most of everything that's in there you've already heard. I just wanted to add, you know, a couple of points. I feel very strongly about this. I'm very worried about what's happening to our country. I see this as probably the only legal and legitimate way to actually get the federal government under control again. I think it's really, we have a runaway Congress. I'm far more worried about that than a runaway convention, and I'd like to see something done to do it. The one point I will address a little bit, and that's the last page of the handout. And that's the grassroots support, okay? I'm part of that grassroots. As David indicated, we are a completely volunteer organization. After I read Mark's book, I went looking for anybody who was doing anything in the area, and I, like David did, found the Convention of States. I immediately got a hold of the national leadership and volunteered. My role is I serve as the Alaska legislative liaison. It's one of our three statewide positions. I'm here to help you, to answer any questions that you have, and to do whatever I can to move the ball forward. But the support is growing. We've got the three statewide positions of the state director, the coalition's director, and the legislative liaison. We've got 57 other folks who are formally signed up as volunteers for the organization, and literally hundreds of people that we've identified as supporters out there, and you're hearing from some of them today. And by the way, I just want to comment, after listening to those students, the future of Alaska is in good hands.
That's right. They're going to take your job, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Just one last item to add. On the news last night that I was reading, Senator Tom Colbert, I think his name, from Oklahoma, is retiring. He's announced his retirement for a number of reasons. But he's not walking away from personal involvement and support of government. He's implied that part of the reason he was resigning was because he's come to the conclusion you can't fix Congress from the inside, so he's going to try and work on it from the outside. And he has announced that he is going to be a heavy supporter of the COS project. So he's going to be out helping us sell this project. And that's basically all I have to say, unless there are any questions from anyone.
Very, very good. I appreciate that. I hope you're available for, as this maybe goes through the process, we'd like to have you available
for
others.
Sir.
And that's the same invitation to everybody else who's testified here today. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you. We have, I believe, Mr. Coons, I believe, has come back online. Are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Could you give a... we're way behind schedule. Could you give us a very short presentation?
Yes, sir. First question is: Is this going to be held over for the discussion? I guess the first question I have.
Well, that's going to be decision of the committee when we close public testimony. We'll see what the will of this committee is. And I'm
the only reason I'm asking is Charles Kafferwitz from Citizens Initiative, who I am representing, would love to have a chance to speak like Mike Ferris did.
If we don't hold it over, he can come back and testify. And if we do move it out, I believe it has another committee referral. So either way, this person can testify.
Okay. Well, my statement that my Mike Coons from Lazy Mountain, and I'm speaking for myself and Citizens Initiatives. Convention of States and Compact for America, along with Citizens Initiative, are all strong patriot organizations who have valid concern about a runaway Congress and judiciary. Thus, we are all working towards the use of Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution in a safe and consistent manner to propose amendments, which will strengthen our Constitution, nation, and to stop the overreach, mandates, and executive orders that are rapidly approaching that of a dictatorship. That said, I would be remiss if not pointing out our major difference with COS that appears in this resolution, that of subject versus specific amendment. Article 5 is specific, in two-thirds of the several states shall call a convention for proposing amendment or amendments. What is before you are, quote, impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and limit the terms of office of federal government officials, end quote. In conversations with Don Brandt, the intent of the resolution is to be able to propose multiple amendments off of each subject. Citizens Initiative's major concern is that Congress will disallow this resolution because it is too general in nature. I have sent to Representative Wilson and Keller documentation and emails on this matter, along with a white paper outlining the pros and cons of COS's methodology. Sadly, I do not see that in the resolution packet, but I hope that all committee members will have a chance to review that. In closing, Citizen Initiatives and myself are for using Article 5 in a safe and clear manner, and that we'll get a convention through Article 5 so that we the people can get our nation back and away from the participation of a dictatorship. We have the precipice of a dictatorship. We have specific calls for a specific amendment that we tried to put forward this year, sadly not enough time. We will be putting forward our state sovereignty and states' rights amendment and counterman amendment for the 2015 session. In answer to Representative Hughes's question, and I believe somebody else's question, on what states have gone through, Arizona, their COS resolution failed, although they are working on a specific delegate resolution. Their indications are that the House side of Florida is floundering, we see a Citizens Initiative is using social media, and we have an internet and a FM station with shows on every Tuesday, and every other Tuesday is for legislative only roundtable. And that concludes my presentation, sir.
Thank you very much, sir, for your concise and informative testimony. Is there anybody else online who would like to testify? Anybody else in the room would like to testify? That I'm going to close public testimony and bring it to the committee for any comments or potential motions. Representative Hughes.
I just have one quick process question for clarification, and Representative Keller might be able to answer this or the sponsor. It's a numbers review and a numbers question. So for this resolution, like other resolutions, it on the floor, it just takes a simple majority. But then we need two-thirds of the states to pass something similar, which would be 34 states. And then once there's a proposed amendment, we need three-fourths of the states to ratify, which is 38. And so my question is for the ratification, is that also a simple majority majority vote back at the state legislative level?
Vice Chair Keller.
I didn't realize you come back up. I didn't mean to jump in.
Yeah,
okay. Article 5 identifies two ways to propose amendments and two ways to ratify. And one of the ways to ratify is three-quarter vote by the state legislatures. In other words, we'd have to come back to ratify. We'd need a three-fourths vote here or 3/4 votes of the states in convention. And that, as far as the distinction between which process is used for ratification, as I understand it, that is up to the U.S. Congress to make that determination once we get past the first trigger, which is the 2/3 that proposed the amendment. So, does that help?
So the 3/4 has to do with a 3/4 vote and not 3/4 of the states, or is it both?
It's either, if I could,
yes,
Mr.
Please.
Chair, it's either, depending on what Congress specifies once we get past 2/3, whether it's going to be 3/4 of the state legislatures or 3/4 of the states in convention. That's up to the Congress, and we can't second guess that what'll happen. So,
yeah, who knows what Congress will do, right? Any other questions or comments? Would anybody, would you care to make any motion?
I would love to make a motion, Mr. Chair. There's another comment there.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yes, sir, Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thanks, Jalen. Just before this moves out of committee, which I suspect is the inevitable outcome, I wanted to make a couple of comments.
Please.
I'm not sure I'll be recommending this to the full body for passage, and I have a couple of concerns. As a rural Democrat, I suppose I'm in the swing block that was referenced earlier in testimony. And I guess I have two fundamental concerns. The first is ideological, and the second is practical. And
sometimes ideological is practical.
It can be, and the two are interrelated. If this is a nonpartisan measure, and I understand that's the intended spirit of it, the four provisions that the Convention of the States outline, I think, have deep ideological connotation. And those connotations are not necessarily nonpartisan. If there were a convention of the states, and if our goal were to reform the federal government, I feel the areas for reform that could be outlined in a joint resolution such as this could be more inclusive and generate support from both sides of the aisle, for instance. One example, gerrymandering and the redistricting process in America, you know, for instance, Democrats manipulate and corral Republicans in states like Maryland or Illinois, and the same happens vice versa in states like Texas and others across America, and nobody wins, and the American public loses. But these four points that are outlined, I think, do have very strong, if not partisan, ideological connotation, and I don't think would generate inclusivity or sort of an atmosphere that would bring the entire country together, which I think is probably the spirit. So that's one concern on sort of an ideological basis. And then on a practical basis, the United States in recent years has faced almost apocalyptic dysfunction on the federal level. And nobody likes that, of course. And a convention of the states or a measure of such sort of magnitude, I worry would be hijacked or crippled by that atmosphere. And it's kind of like grocery shopping after you've fasted for 48 hours. It's just bad to sort of put yourself in that position. And especially considering the groups and people behind this whose philosophy I very much respect but do not necessarily share, a convention of the states, I think, would lead to the kind of dysfunction we've seen in Congress, but in a different and perhaps even more important forum. So those are two very specific concerns I have about this measure, and I wanted to put them on the record, but thank everyone for their testimony today and the sponsor for bringing this forward for consideration.
Thank you. I think that's very well said. What's the wish of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, though, I just want to, again, put on the record, hopefully helping, because Representative Christ Thompson just brought up. Those four points are the spending and the debt crisis, the regulatory crisis, and the congressional tax on state sovereignty, and the federal takeover of decision-making. And I just would hope that we can come to terms and be able to understand in a bipartisan way what those things mean. But just, you know, we'll all keep an open mind. Mr. Chair, I would move that we move HJR 22 version uniform out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving it to the next committee? Okay. If not, we'll move to the next committee, which is, I believe, Judiciary Committee?
No, yeah. Finance.
Oh, yeah. Oh, go to Finance Committee. Okay, fine. With that, we'll close the bill, and thank you for your testimony and those you had testify.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Okay. We're going to go quickly to HB 274. Obviously, we're going to be running short here. I do want to at least, the other one is HR 17, which will take some discussion. I want to at least have you, Representative Guerra, at least introduce, would at least introduce the bill so we can get it as the bill previously heard. Nod your head if that's satisfactory. Okay, thank you. Representative Millett, please talk to us about HB 274.
Thank you. Chairman Lynn, for the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I represent District 24 in Anchorage. House Bill 274 is a rules bill, but I'll be carrying it on behalf of the rules chairman. HB 274 is an act relating to public hearings on initiatives and referendums. For those of you who have been in the legislature for a time, about 4 years ago, we passed a big, broad piece of legislation called HB 36, which was better known as the Open and Transparent Initiative Act, which made some changes to our initiative laws. We made them more open and more transparent. That bill did four things, two initiatives, and this one thing that we did leave out of that initiative bill is we did not include referendums in the initiative bill. We specifically did the legislation for initiatives because referendums haven't been used in several years in the state's history. As of now, we do have a referendum on the books, and we wanted to make sure that the referendum had the same opportunities that initiative has because it has the force of law also, much as initiatives do. So briefly, I'll just go through what we're adding to the initiative bill. It's just adding referendums, and what we did in the bill, it requires the lieutenant governor to schedule a peer on the ballot to hold at least two hearings in all four judicial districts, which gives the opportunity for both the pros and the cons of the referendum to have an opportunity to tell the public why they support it or why they don't support it. The lieutenant governor is a moderator of those meetings. We've had in the past initiatives that have gone through this process, especially I can quote the first one that we did was on coastal zone management. It really did inform the public about what coastal zone management did, how it affected local communities. The second thing that the initiative bill did that will include referendums at this point in time is that it will establish a hearing in the committee of jurisdiction for the referendum, and it will be chosen by the, just as the initiative, chosen by the Speaker of the House and the Senate President. One standing committee will have to hear the bill, and they can't make any changes to the referendum. They can only hear, again, the pros and the cons of the bill. You cannot change a referendum by legislature. So it's just an informational hearing so the public understands what they're voting on. The fourth thing it does, it requires the bill and the initiative and the referendum to appear on the ballot. The effective date of the act applies to sections 2 and 3 of the initiatives and referendum on the ballot. So it'll be on the 2014. If it appears on the 2014 ballot, then this act would apply. So any referendums or any initiatives that are currently going to be on the ballot, this bill will apply to them. So every referendum, every initiative, obviously the initiatives are going to go through this process, but the initiative, the referendums will now be included into this bill. And the last thing it does is it makes the provisions of this bill effective immediately.
Let me ask you, so this would apply to any referenda that's going to be voted on in the primary and
in the general.
In August?
In August.
Okay.
I'll give you a little bit of history about the initiative bill in the past. We did neglect to put referendums in it just because we just hadn't had a referendum in so long, and we had an onslaught of initiatives come forward. We had a cruise ship initiative. We had coastal zone management initiative come forward. What we found and what sparked this interest in having some public hearings around the state is that initiatives were getting very broad. There is a single issue requirement for our initiative, but as we saw in the cruise ship initiative, actually included six different subjects in the initiative, and it was confusing to the public when it was said it was just a head tax initiative, which it wasn't. It applied to taxing and revealing profits from sales of offshore cruises, offshore things that you could buy on the ship, which is something that you know, the state didn't need to know the profit margin for folks that were going on a zip line. So there were some changes made legislatively after 2 years, because a referendum and an initiative can't be changed for 2 years. This provides the public with an opportunity to know exactly what's in the referendum, what it's going to do, what it's going to affect. One of the other things that it does is it requires the lieutenant governor to get from the departments that the referendum affects the impacts to the state of Alaska, whether they're negative or whether they're positive. So if it's going to cost the state, a referendum or initiative is going to cost the state an increase in any type of budgetary process or increase in employees, that has to be disclosed in the initiative and in the referendum, which wasn't part of initiative prior to that. So we could pass an initiative and not know the cost or not know the impact to the state of Alaska. So it clarifies that those things will be open and transparent, and people will have a full knowledge of what the referendum or what the initiative does. When the initiative, when HB 36 passed 4 years ago, it was passed unanimously, has the support of both bodies. I think one person voted against it, but other than that, it is just a process in which we want to make sure that the voters have every opportunity to have a conversation about what the referendum does, what it doesn't do, how much it will cost, and how it will affect them personally or professionally if it has to do with their business. So again, it's just including referendums in the initiative act that we passed 4 years ago. It's an excellent bill, Mr. Chairman. It has a zero fiscal note. The Lieutenant Governor's office is the one that will conduct the hearings around the state, and they've said that they can absorb the costs. There was no fiscal note on the initiative bill either, because it's part of the Lieutenant Governor's budget can cover the cost of the travel. Just so folks that weren't here when the initiative passed, if people can't appear in person in the eight meetings in the four judicial districts, we do have a exception in the law for telephonic. They can submit written testimony. They can have a proxy come and talk about the pros or the cons. But it really is an informational opportunity for the citizens of the state of Alaska to understand what we're doing. These referendums and these initiatives have the force of law, and when we take a bill in the legislature, it gets a thorough vetting through the committee process. When initiatives, prior to the passage of HB 36, when initiatives are introduced, they also have the force of the law, but even stronger, because they can't be changed for 2 years. So we thought it was important that folks understood that when an initiative or a referendum passes, they're untouchable for 2 years. We have to live with that. And so having the opportunity to talk about it publicly, completely around the state, and inform the voters on what is in the referendum and what it actually does, without it just being a bumper sticker slogan, just actual factual data, and the opportunity to hear the pros and cons is something that I think is very important. The initiative bill was well received. People attended the meetings. I can tell you I attended on the Coastal Zone Management meetings around the state. I attended three of them with the Lieutenant Governor because I was the sponsor of the initiative bill, and was impressed at the amount of people that showed up for the meetings, that were engaged, that actually really wanted to have the information that was being given to them by both sides of the argument. So with that, Mr. Chairman, you also have a letter from AML that supports the bill. They can talk about a little bit about how they appreciate that things that affect them, initiatives that affect them, they have the opportunity to go out publicly on the as we call it, the Lieutenant Governor tour, and talk about how it will affect the municipality. So I would hope that each member would consider the bill and pass it, so we can get it through the other body, and the Lieutenant Governor can start on the road to the current referendum that's out, which is on SB 21, and inform the voters on exactly how the effect of repealing SB 21 it would hamper or would help the state of Alaska, whichever side you're on.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. This requires some discussion and some testimony. I want to hear from Gil Fanumiai and somebody, I have a name here, from the governor's office, but we cannot do that because of time. So I'm going to hold this bill and we'll get it back on our calendar as fast as we can.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Guerra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to present a constitutional amendment, it's Chair 17, to take the current dividend formula and put it in the Constitution. In the 5 minutes that we have left, I think I can...
Yeah, it'd be pretty persuasive to get this out here in 5 minutes.
I can give you some good information. Former Senator Rick Halford was online, but he had to leave as the hearing went on. But this is the issue. Yeah, I became friends with former Governor Jay Hammond in his later years. Rick Halford had always been friends with former Governor Jay Hammond. As Jay Hammond would say, you get a fair share for your oil first and you touch the dividend last. And there are a lot of reasons for that. The dividend creates roughly 10,000 jobs in this state for our economy. It levels out the highs and lows. We've had the least differential growth between rich and poor in the state of any other state in the country because of the permanent fund dividend. Cutting the dividend is the most regressive thing we can do, because if you were to cut it by $500, you take $500 away from somebody who makes $12 an hour, $500 away from somebody who makes $2 million a year. It hits the working class the hardest. If I could read just something that Jay Hammond said while he was still with us, if you wouldn't mind.
Please, go ahead.
He said in the Juneau Empire that his dividend program would, among other reasons, allow Alaskans to share in their resource wealth, to confine the benefits to Alaskans only. It would have an equitable impact on both rich and poor, and it would maximize the favorable impact upon the state's economy by keeping a far larger portion of money to fund the programs here in the state of Alaska. It benefits the economy. It creates jobs. And as fiscal pressures start mounting in the state, there are some, and it's happened in the past, who the first place they're going to go is to the permanent fund dividend. I would like to protect the current dividend formula that we have in the Constitution so that the dividend does not get decreased as people start fighting over deficits. Right now, according to the Department of Revenue's last two forecasts done under what they call the same new methodology they use, even under this new oil bill, they project we're going to be down to about 370,000 barrels of oil a year, 10 years from now, about the same as they had predicted under the former oil law. We are probably going to be down over the next 10 years about $12 billion in revenue. That'll depend on oil prices. But what I don't want to get thrown in this mix is for the people's dividend to be harmed as the public tries to figure out how to deal with these deficits. Maybe we're going to reverse SB 21. Of course, that's my hope. I know that there's disagreement around the table about that. But regardless of how we proceed forward, the dividend has been a way to stabilize the economy in the state, to make sure people in rural Alaska have money for fuel and for the things that they need, to make sure that people who are hardworking in rural Alaska and in urban Alaska have a chance to at least keep a certain amount of money in their pocket to pay for the necessities in life. When they do that, that money goes straight into the economy. You know, ICER has a study out on the favorable impacts of the dividend. That's in your packet. That's the study on what it does to help the economy stabilize. It also talks about how it's prevented the wide increase in inequality between the most wealthy and the hardest working lower income people. And with that, Mr. Chair, I know maybe you'll want to have more discussion, but all the bill does is take the current dividend formula and puts it in the Constitution. Actually, I just got a note that former Senator Halford is back online, and you might want to take a few words.
I do see we've got about 1 minute to go, so I don't know. It'll be, we will bring this back before the committee, by the way. Mr. Halford, can you have about 1 minute?
Well, 1 minute's a short piece of time, but thank you for considering it. It is an important issue. It is sad that the constituency for equality doesn't have enough insiders in that it's not regressive enough to some or progressive enough for others. But the fact is that the permanent fund dividend is a part of the economic base of the state of Alaska. And if you did need $100 million, who would want to take half of that from the poor, retired, and underemployed, and 100% of it from Alaska residents, nothing from non-residents? It's the worst place to go for money, even in a time of choice. But you don't have a lot of time, so I will be glad to testify to everybody.
Thank you, Senator. We will probably hear this bill again as soon as we can fit it in. And you'd be invited, I'm sure, by the sponsor also to come back and maybe expand on the pluses and minuses of this. With that, we're going to hold this bill and hear it again. And we're going to close out in a moment. We will be meeting on Tuesday to go to the calendar. The calendar has not yet been finalized, and we'll get a copy of what we're going to be hearing at that time. So very, very interesting day today, I think. And I want to thank the committee. Any closing comments from anybody? If not, we are adjourned.